that was one of the most amusing and amazing. I'll let it run for a little bit as we get going, but they did the Avengers, and they had, like, you know, sticks on paper mache planes on sticks going through the city. And
well, hey there, welcome back to Tales from the Jungle Cruise. I know it's been a while, and I know you've missed the podcast, and really, I have to tell you that I've missed you too. I've sat alone at night dreaming of the day that we'd return together to be joined in the bonds of holy podcastimony. And lucky you, today is that day. We were able to sit down with Skipper Grant and Skipper Chris in the palatial Skipcast recording studios and talk about their time at the Jungle Cruise. As some of you know, we'll cover this in the podcast. I had a little health blip and took me out for a couple weeks and kind of ruined my recording schedule. We have a lot of podcasts set up to record in the next few weeks, so hopefully we'll have quite a bit more content for you. Lots of other exciting news coming up. We talk about it at the end of the podcast. So we'll just get straight into episode 8, our little talk with Skipper Chris and Skipper Grant. Had a guy painted in green body paint to do the Hulk bits, and
interesting. I love that. You know, I get so out of the culture these days now that I have kids, so it's like, you know, I'm loving the fact that people are making tons of 80s references because I lived it. Not, you know, once we get past the 90s, I'm starting to lose it.
We all have our cultural touchstones. The fun part is that the stuff that we grew up with is cool again, as is evidenced by $4,500 sneakers that light up and don't self-lace. But yet they'll sell on eBay for ridiculous amounts of money. So, all right, well, we'll roll this in as the first minute. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Tales from the Jungle Cruise, episode 8, probably, as things go in the naming scheme of things. Sorry for the long delay. I'm sure as some of you have heard, I had a little bit of a health blip that took me out for about 2 weeks and kind of killed my recording schedule. So I apologize to everyone. Thank you for the hate-filled emails and the anthrax-filled letters. Those have been much appreciated. Has helped me heal up quickly. So today I'm sitting as kind of a departure from me sitting with people who I know and are friends and people who I've personally worked with. I did what any single, lonely, and desperate person does in Los Angeles. I went on Craigslist. And we found Skippers Chris and Skippers Grant, Chris Lamberth, and Grant, I apologize.
It's Grant Pachoco.
We just said it.
Too many C's, too many O's.
Yeah, you have to hit at least, you know, three times. If I say it three times, you'll appear in a mirror and we'll figure it out. Grant, you were there at the Happy Boat Ride at the Disney parks from 93 to 95.
That's correct.
And Chris, 87. So that puts you there before I graduated high school. I just wanted to make a point of that.
That's right. That's when I graduated high school. Fabulous.
So, and Grant, were you there early on as well? In 93, you would have been there?
I had just finished my freshman year of college. And was faced with moving back up home for the summer. And then I was like, no, I really want to work at Disneyland because I had gone so many times. So I went and applied. That's when I got it.
Okay. So it's always tough when, obviously, we're such I think Disney as a whole, every 3 years becomes a new company. You know, they've got new management that shifts. The focus of the theme park management's different. So it's tough kind of for us to get that base reference point. Chris, we'll go farthest back with you to 87. What was it like with you coming into the Disney kind of family? What was the process? What was the experience for you?
Well, I agree with you that Disney has always been, and even what our experience in the jungle on the Jungle Cruise was, is generational. I think that over time, because of, I'll just say the economy, but, you know, there was a day, prior to my coming on, there were a lot of people that had worked there from, you know, 10 years pass. You know, so I guess that window is shrinking. Where I always thought it was like a 5-year turnover, probably is now a 3-year turnover. But you're right, it always moves on. So for me, I had a friend that one summer said, "Hey, you know, why don't we go do this?" And I'm like, "Well, all right." And you have that little, and it's changed. I know everything's changed for those guys that have probably been there the last 5 or 10 years, but.
And Foods, actually, Foods has each position turns over an employee 3 times a year. They have a 4-month average in Foods right now, from what I understand.
Well, and that's the beauty of the averages, because I think, you know, even I was there this past weekend, I still saw people that I know were there before I was there. So yeah. I got pulled in from a friend, and it wasn't something I thought I would do. I wasn't always like, I'm going to have to work at Disneyland. It kind of lucked into it, and I'm happy I did. I mean, it was a high school job initially. You know, there was a time I came in right after, you know, in short term, after the strike, where, you know, there's still some people around today that celebrate or that can say that they were there. And that was a, you know, tough time for the company. It was still family owned. Roy Miller, you know, again, preceding me, was the president of the company. You know, it wasn't until, you know, the Eisner and Wells era, which I came in on the very early end of that really we saw that initial change, really kind of the re-energization of the Disney brand, you know, and putting it out there, you know, beyond the theme parks. I mean, still impressed of what's going on there right now. But I got in early and was fortunate to be involved with a lot of guys that had been there way back.
And you really, I mean, even on the park side, you can pin it down to pre-Little Mermaid, post-Little Mermaid.
Sure.
I mean, that 89, that was the movie that changed everything, because it became the grand Disney again. It wasn't just this theme park that wasn't getting the repairs and, you know, that wasn't really being run that way. So, and we'll hit that the upkeep stuff too. And then Grant, for you, when you came in, I mean, it was a little bit later, 93. What was kind of the game for you? What was the?
Well, I hired in after my freshman year of college. And my senior year, after my senior year in high school, I grew up in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And after my senior year in high school, we wanted to go on a graduation trip, and we went to Disneyland, and it was just awesome. Like, we, you know, our parents let a bunch of us just go for a week, just come down to Disneyland, and I loved it. And so I think that stuck in my head. And then when I was looking for a job, you know, and I of course my freshman year had gone a bunch of times to Disneyland, and I was just like, I want to work here. I want to do this. And it was always either working on the Jungle Cruise, which is where I wanted to work, or the Country Bear Jamboree. Those were my two choices of where I wanted to work, and I got Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, better job security with Jungle now.
Yes, true.
And now, Chris, was Jungle your first attraction? Where did you start
out at? Yeah, Jungle was the first attraction. I mean, you know, put it in perspective. You know, I love the fact, all of us are Los Angelinos currently. We live locally. Southern Californians, so, and I'm sure you guys have probably been back frequently. I'm recently back to California, but I love going back, having been away for a while, not having, you know, when you're there, you don't see all the little changes. So for me, right, wrong, or different, I kind of like the fact that things have tweaked a bit. But I was there prior to, of course, California Adventure, saw a lot of that come online, was there just after, obviously, tickets. You know, that was a big transition when, you know, passports became to be. And generation-wise, you know, I was thinking about, you know, where do Grant and I fit in? If Grant was right pre-Indy, you know, I was pre-Aladdin, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they still had the Tahitian Terrace and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I still kind of love that era of thinking back when, you know, they still had this great Polynesian show, which, you know, it's so funny. Back, I understand the overlap they want to do with all the branding and all the different motion picture elements and animation elements, but how cool would it have been if they just left the Tahitian Terrace now and people would be flocking to it. But, well, you know.
Yeah, and I think the space is really not used, I think, in the way that they want to see it used. But I know a lot of the issue was that they would have had to rehab all the kitchens. And that was a pretty major cost for them.
Well, you know, I think cost is all relative to them because, you know, look what they're doing now. There hasn't been a restaurant there, you know, backs into the, you know, the Plaza Pavilion, right? Or no, that was...
It's the annual passport process.
Well, it's that's even gone now. So now it's going to be a tie-in with, I believe, Mary Poppins, and it's going to be a merchandise location. It was kind of a little bit of a pin trading location. But, you know, that whole complex, I think the little gym that stayed there, surprisingly, is... Ever walk by the juice bar? I mean, people are still just lining up for that, the Dole Whip and the Spear. So,
And on the Angeleno side, there's up here at Fairfax and Santa Monica, there's a place that's brought in all 8 flavors of Dole Whip, all the major flavors, and you can actually get it with the vanilla soft serve blend the way we used to get at the in-between. I guess generationally that was my thing, that was my change. I got there and they just phased out that machine where we could have the Dole Whip at the in-between.
I don't remember that, but you remember Sunkissed, I presume, which used to be a Lisi, right there where Bengal Barbecue became Bengal Barbecue. Mm-hmm. And that was awesome. And that was, again, I guess that's another generational thing, too.
Yeah, because it was always Bengal Barbecue when I was there, I think.
Yeah. But, I mean, everything, I mean, it's just a matter of waiting long enough and things will shift, you know, and you'll get the new things. And I think that's the joy is that there's still, obviously, the touchstones and the things that have lasted. The thing I've noticed from my time, which it would have been 11 years ago I hired in now, is the level of respect for the magic as far as the groundskeeping and the operations and all that seems to be at a high point right now. You know, I remember going in 99, 2000 before I was working there, and there were cracks on the monorail, you know, the legs of it, you know, the trash wasn't getting picked up. And now I think that they are doing a much better job of kind of keeping the magic alive. There's a much more, and of course they're charging an arm and a leg for the right to go in and do that. So,
well, what do you think? I mean, Grant, you came in right there at that time that eventually got its first kind of tweak right before Indy.
I haven't been back as recently. It's probably been a year or so since I've been back.
It's
to
about
the
same
so,
for me actually.
So I can't speak of recently, but I just know that when they did close it, they closed Jungle to change the course of the river to bring Indian and stuff. Like, I was a little bit like, oh, why are they? Because I'd worked on it before. But then, like, I loved it. I thought it was great afterwards. And when they started retheming the boats, every time I would come to work and there was a new rethemed boat, I just thought it was fantastic. I loved it. And so if it continues that way, I think that's great.
I think, you know, we talked a lot about it eventually. And I keep thinking about, you know, contextual stuff. But, you know, for the Jungle Cruise, I think it's cool for all of us. And hopefully, regardless how it changed, if people are there a summer or, you know, a full year, 3 years, 30 years, the ride goes down for rehab. I think it should be mandatory that they get groups of guys and walk them through the river, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, but a lot of us had to kind of figure out creative ways of getting behind the green walls and sneaking a peek. And so I'm just glad that we got, I know you and I have photographic proof of being in the river.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that was funny because I see people, especially with Facebook, people post all these pictures from when they worked there. And it's like, and I was like, the only time I ever thought to bring a camera was the day we got to walk through the Jungle Cruise when they had drained the river. And that's the only time I ever really thought of bringing a camera.
Which is funny because you're kind of guy that, you know, takes picture and video, right?
Or
at least
well,
maybe
yeah,
evolved
now,
into it.
Cell phones and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and it's different even now. I mean, I remember having a Razor, you know, I was so impressed I could get a text message from the other person I knew who had a cell phone, you know, when I was working Lincoln or something like that. And now it's, you know, I'm sure everyone's backstage checking their Facebook status the second they're on a break or, you know, that whole thing has kind of changed the game.
I remember it was pagers we had to worry about. You couldn't wear a pager, right? That was...
the technology is... No, and it's... I think that's probably one of the top 2 or 3... I apologize to all the listeners for our fabulous audio quality. We're taping today at my retail store up in LA at the Farmer's Market up at the Grove, and because it was just kind of a convenient thing. You know, we have Grant and Chris back here in my store, or as I like to call it, the backside of retail.
Backside of retail, I love that.
So audio quality may be a little bumpy, but I think it's the big piece of advice. People ask me, you know, no one actually asked me this, but if someone did ask me what my advice would be for them as a Jungle Cruise skipper, it would be,
hey Kyle,
take lots of...
Yes. What would be your advice as a Jungle Cruise skipper?
You know, that's a phenomenal question. I don't think I've ever thought about that, but I would have to say take lots of pictures. I think that's the biggest thing is that, you know, the time goes by so darn quick and you don't realize. My prized gem is I have a picture of myself riding the rhino out on the Native Uprising scene with my pith helmet hanging on its horn. So at some point I'll put that up on Facebook.
Well, that's great. You know, I'm just thinking about, you know, there were a couple guys back in the day in the 80s, like Jerry Whitfield, who produced a lot of videos, and he's on our Facebook, our old Department 951 Facebook, I guess it's a fan page now. Club 951. But, you know, he's got some great clips that he's kind of embedded that are fun to look back when. And you get to see the pre-indie Jungle Cruise, which is pretty neat. And, you know, which is, you know the original at one point. And I don't know if that tree was in the queue or if it's somewhere between indie and the existing Jungle Cruise, but there was a very landmark quality, huge date palm tree. It was massive that goes back to where the old Dominguez house was. And so I don't even know if that's there. I haven't even thought to look, but there's some real cool stuff there. And having a camera to be able to remember that is awesome. And I was lucky to take a couple with myself working the ride, but I have no video. I mean, do you guys have any video?
I have one video.
I had, there was a skipper who was the guy I did the third episode with, who was the cameraman. He went through and actually filmed about 40 skippers doing their full top to bottom routines.
That's cool.
And he actually has a video he's going to cut together of the perfect Jungle Cruise script with all of us, you know.
At each spot.
It's a little stop in there. So, but yeah, no, I mean, I wish I had more document evidence, you know. Just, you forget people, and it's nice to have the faces to put with the names.
My video is, and this is really predating everything, was at the time there was a BBS, which was the old, you call in with your modem, and it's like a bulletin board, but you call in with your modem, and it was called the Mouse House, BBS.
It was pre-Prodigy.
Yeah, and it was, and so it was just all these Disney fans, annual pass holders on there, so Doug and I would always go on there, and we would post as Jungle Cruise skippers, and one day they had a Mouse House day at Disneyland, where just all the people on that bulletin board came to Disneyland. And so they rode my boat and they filmed it. And
oh,
I'm so
great.
Lucky they did, because I didn't have any other film otherwise. And they let me borrow the tape and I never returned it. And I was like, well, I'm not returning it now. I'm just going to keep it because it's the one remembrance of my crew. You know?
My problem is it's on VHS. And I, of course, now I'm like, damn, I got to go find a VCR and convert this and actually get it. There's a skipper who, when they did the Year of a Million Dreams, they did the Dream Jobs thing. And Skipper Brody, who's the one who won that and got to be flown out and did the Jungle Cruise for like 3 days as a non-cast member. Which, by the way, great idea for Disney to keep their labor costs down. Just
have a volunteer.
Please, come work for us.
That's hilarious.
But anyway, he posted a bunch of videos on YouTube, and one of them is 1956 or 7, Ed Sullivan on the Jungle
I've
with the brownie camera.
Wow.
And they've green screened the background, so he's kind of looks like he's either in a boat or standing in front of a window in his office. And you're really not sure what the bars are.
And he's spieling?
And he's just talking about his brownie camera.
Oh,
he can capture
okay.
the action.
Well, look at that hippo there. Oh, I got him there. Beautiful.
You can shoot the animals yourself with a camera.
A new Kodak brownie.
I still have always wondered that someday someone's going to be just a little unhinged and, like, pull out a revolver and just plunk at the hippos.
Well,
damn it!
You know what's funny, and this is also dating me where I was at the time. You know, the big Disney release was Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie Fleischer, you know, comedian, I don't know what he's done the last 25 years, but he came to the park to do a special filming. It was on the Jungle Cruise. He was doled up in the old costume from Wardrobe, and they, you know, they had it all lit, so I wonder where that appeared.
That's on YouTube. And it was a TV spot that they did. And it's still on YouTube somewhere. I've seen the footage on that.
That would be fun to see. I mean, if you've seen it, I'm glad it's out there.
He's getting with the big bug eye thing that he used, you know, that really popping the facial expressions and we were talking too about you know, Jungle's interesting because not only do you have people who've gone on to work at Disney, you know, a lot of John Lasseter obviously, but a lot of the
he worked in Anaheim.
He was Jungle.
Yeah, because I knew he worked there, and I've seen a couple things on him. So when he said it was a Jungle Cruise skipper, of course, that was an awesome kind of thing to just, you know, now for me it's like, yeah, I get it. Now, of course he was a skipper.
Brilliant
man. Of course he was a skipper.
Well, he actually did a contest where anyone who could find either photographic or video proof of him would get a 7-night, you know, stay at the hotel. And how great is it to have a job where you can do that? If you happen to have a high school yearbook, I'll treat you to a month in Hawaii. And, you know, nice of him to be able to use his power in that responsible fashion.
So let's try to think of someone. You know, predating me, I mean, there were guys like, was it Nordquist, the Olympian who'd worked there prior to me, so that was early 80s. Yep. I mean, so there's a lot of guys who predate us, that maybe Sue B can fill in the blank someday. Well,
and I think the biggest one, and this is was Kevin Costner. And you know, the understanding, basically, he's disavowed his ever working there, but he was a couple of years at Jungle.
We'll have to fact check that one. We know he went to Cal State Fullerton.
No, he worked at Jungle. We have proof, but his people.
We have his D208 card. He was written up for not being funny.
For having cruises that lasted 3 hours that nobody liked.
He kept backing up and wanted to redo every scene.
There was too damn much water everywhere. But the worst part is when Dennis Hopper pops up at the dock and, you know, tries to set his boat on fire. That really just breaks the whole thing down. So.
And when he comes out of the water on the jet ski, it was perfect. I love that part.
It was great. Which reminds me, did you ever go up to Universal and see the Waterworld show that they had at Universal?
You know, I want to say I did.
I've seen it once.
That actually lasted longer than the movie did. I mean, I think that show had been up there for probably 6 or 7 years.
I saw Waterworld in the theaters, come on.
I saw it in the theaters.
Oh, I saw it in the theaters, yeah. It was a big event. That's, you know, that's the other, jaded as I am on movies, very few things excite me as far as upcoming releases. The Muppet movie is a big one that I'm really excited about. Other than Toy Story 3D and X-Men First Class, the last two things I've seen in the theaters, Disney has had the only things I've even wanted to see in the theaters the last few years. It's just been like a blah cinematic time.
You know, and I went to go see Cars 2. I thought one of the best part of Cars 2 was the little Pixar short in the beginning.
I still love the Pixar shorts. It's kind of fun to see that go back. So as far as actual, you know, the little Jungle moments, we kind of always kind of break it into two categories of, you know, celebrity moments. If you had any people you got to meet while you were at Jungle, it was just amazing stories. I've told my Michael Jackson story on the podcast a couple times. Rebecca Romijn Stamos. I mean, there's always some fun. So who were some of the people you guys got to meet that were kind of formative?
As far as being actually on my boat, it was during a Lion King. It was right when Lion King came out, and there was a special event in Adventureland where they closed off Adventureland. The rest of the park was open, but it was a special event in Adventureland for cast members and stuff. And so I had Leonard Maltin and Debbie Allen on my boat. I did help Charlie Sheen off a boat. Which is funny how that's become topical now. And another thing was, Paula Abdul came on a boat. She was in the boat in front of me. And at the time, people said that I resembled Emilio Estevez. And this was when they had just, I guess, divorced. Or I don't know if they were married, but they were definitely a couple. They were a couple, I think it was Padra.
Padra Rampton.
Was in the boat in front with Paula Abdul off. And then as she's getting off the boat, Padra is like going to her like, hey, doesn't he look like Emilio Estevez? Because I had just come into the dock behind him, and I was just like, oh, for crying out loud. The only other celebrity encounter I have, and it was during that same Lion King event, and I won't mention any names except that he was he's a comedian. And he was on the TV show Full House, and he was a comedian who was there. And I was working.
There's two in mind.
I know, but I'm not going to.
Okay.
There's only really two comedians on that show, and then there's John Stamos.
And this is the one that was not referenced in an Alanis Morissette song.
Okay,
so
perfect.
Does that narrow it down?
Yeah, narrows it down.
I was working at just the greeter position for this thing, and this cute little kid comes up, and I go, hey, you gonna go on the Jungle ride? And I go, and she goes, I forget actually if it was a boy or a girl, but goes, yeah, I am. I'm just waiting for my dad. And I go, oh, it's great. Well, do you know how to swim? You know, just as like a little joke, you know? And she goes, yeah. And I go, okay, good. I go, you probably won't need to, but just in case. And I'd seen somebody had come up behind her, and I look, and it's the father, and he goes, we're fine, thanks. And just took his daughter away, and so she was not. He was not happy that I was trying to be funny. I guess he had to be the funny one.
Well,
so you're going on the wrong ride, pal.
That's too bad. Well, although you know, we should talk about guest spiels soon. But my celebrity encounters consist of a lot of, you know, again, I'd be dating myself. I mean, you mentioned Emilio Estevez. But I had Danny DeVito. You know, I'm trying to think of the ones that you've met. Well, let's think of Jungle Cruise specific. Having Rhea Perlman and Danny DeVito on the boat with their young kids at the time. That was pretty cool. You know, and there's always that little perk, especially when you have someone like that. You want to do that little, that, you know, do your best spiel.
Right. You know, this could be your big
break. Be as SOP as possible. But yeah, I mean, there are a number of, you know, the one I didn't have, but, you know, Joe DiMaggio, when I rode a boat. It wasn't on my boat, but, you know, Joe DiMaggio was there. You know, there was a time where Joe Piscopo would make the rounds. Tom Hanks and his wife would make the rounds and with their kids. Actually, had Tom Hanks, you know, on Thunder a few times. He was great. A lot of times, you know, those celebrities like the Tom Hanks, they were just real, I mean, not that we were hounding them while we were working, but they were very, you know,
down to earth,
approachable,
and real,
down to earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was definitely cool. But, you know, there's so many, you know, was it Anthony Michael, who the bassist for Van Halen?
Oh, yeah, Anthony Michael.
Anthony Michael. See,
Michael Hall.
Not
no.
Anthony Michael Hall. What are you doing to me?
Michael Anthony
is
his name.
There you go. Yeah. See? Apologies to Michael Anthony.
That would have been the Breakfast Club. Yeah.
Well, but, you know, it was stuff like that. You know, it was also cool, the guys that didn't necessarily have to have the VIP treatment. I mean, I saw everyone has probably had a Michael Jackson sighting that was there in our era. I saw him on several rides. We had to bring him back through Thunder and stuff like that. But, I mean, God, there's so many. You forget them probably because they're not relevant anymore.
I never saw Michael Jackson while I worked there.
Oh,
I mean,
right.
I'm sure he was there, you know, but I did cite him on a family vacation years earlier before I started working there.
He was the master of disguise. At one point, well, he would come in, right, and kind of the tip-off would be he was with a VIP tour guide and doing a special tour. You know, he would, the time I remember seeing him, he kind of went in the old man disheveled look, you know, with the gray beard and everything. I mean, and we were like on Main Street, and he was shopping, and it was just like whisper, whisper, whisper. Yeah. And I didn't really notice it until I noticed a VIP tour guide hostess back there. I'm like, oh, that's got to be him, you know. But, yeah, then there was the times where he would just be, I'm going to call it the Macaulay Culkin era. He was just Michael Jackson and loved the attention. But.
Well, this is kind of related, not totally, but when that Lion King event, when they closed down Adventureland, I don't know if you worked that event.
I was around. I remember that event.
But they brought in TV writers to write new jokes for the Jungle Cruise.
Oh, wow, I didn't remember that.
And they actually had people in gorilla costumes out in the jungle, and we were supposed to, like, there were these little set scenes where we were supposed to do this, like, dialogue referencing these things. And so, like, before we started the shift, before the party started, they took us on a tour, and they go, okay, here you're going to say this, 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 here's your script, you know, you're going to say this, this, this. And we were all looking at each other like, well, this isn't funny, this isn't, you know, anything. And I just remember that, you know, we did the jokes for, like, the first couple times around, and then it just became, you know, like, we were just doing the regular jokes and referencing these weird people in gorilla costumes. Because, I don't know, to me it was like, you have these great animatronics, but then you have some guy in a gorilla costume who's throwing bananas at the boat. You know, it was just, it was crazy to me.
I'm glad I missed that one. I think that event, too, we had, like, the, you know, the Wayans brothers, you know, the Dean Cain, that was his, you know, Superman era, stuff
yeah.
like that. I mean, those are the kind of celebrities that I remember that were jungle specific. But I guess, you know, that whole... You always wanted to give the good spiel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then outside of the celebrity side of things, as far as just interesting, you know, events, you know, I think the big one from our generation was one of the things happened. We had a guy fall off the second story of the boathouse, bounce off the canvas tarp and fall into the water between two boats. That's
guest.
Kind of one of our guests. Was reaching for a pair of sunglasses and... was just either inebriated or stupid, but you know, we had a guy who broke his leg on a boat and just all those fun things, because really the tragedy of the guest, that was what we really reveled on. If someone would slip and fall or drive an ECV into the water, those are the moments we really relished. We had, you know, bamboo coming down on top of boats and all the great horticulture things. But, I mean, any fun guest interactions or things, I guess, you know, 10, 15 years later, what stuck with you in a way that, you know...
Don't you like almost sometimes
little
like,
Timmy moments?
Didn't we always kind of enjoy kind of pretending they weren't there sometimes? No, sometimes like there's that there are those moments obviously when you are in the boat that you know you're a heightened awareness, but you know if you're load you know or unload and you're sitting there can be a great kind of like these people just happen to be there, but you're really talking to the guy at front load or rear load, but. I mean, guests do the dumbest things, and I think that I would have to say that there's so many, right? I mean, I go back. You went referenced the new Jungle Cruise, the rethemed one, which I only barely worked a few on the new one, but on the old one was great, and the you know, classic coming in, welcome to the exit. I mean, the exit was much more accessible back then, although you can still get to it. There's a lot of signs, a little more hidden. I mean, just a lot of crazy people come to the exit, but, you know, you talk about electric wheelchairs. There was a family, you know, they park a wheelchair, and I wish I would have, you know, the little evil part of me, I wish the wheelchair would have fell in, but they thought they put the brakes on Grandpa, and it started rolling to the water, and the guy on the, you know, caught him right before the little front wheels tipped, but it was just hilarious, because, you know, everything was in slow motion, and you get to see that kind of stuff, but, I mean... I don't know.
I just remember, I don't even know where I was, I just remember this clearly. I don't know, I wasn't on the boat, but there was and I think she was in a wheelchair, but a very large woman who was just very, very...
large.
Oh, she was large. And she needed help getting up out of the boat because she could not make the step up onto the seat and then up onto the dock. And so I don't know who it was. It may have been... Well, I don't know. I'm not going to guess because I don't know who it was. But it was one of a smaller stature skipper came down into the boat to kind of help her, who was at unload, help her from behind. And the boat shifted. The boat shifted, and he got pinned between the smokestack and this lady because the boat had gone over the... And he was just like, get her up! Like, it was like all SOP went out the window. Because he was just being crushed a little bit between this woman and the smokestack.
You know, I remember the old, again, back when Teach and Terrace was still there, and the less, I guess OSHA probably wouldn't approve the walkway. It was just, you know, we had the little stepping stones, right?
Oh, yeah, the cross.
And really, if you just did 6 inches too far to left, you know, as you're, you know, or the right, depending which way you're headed, you're in the jungle, and just seeing... You know, several guys just, you know, whether they had a setup coming to or from storage, just missed their step and falling. I mean, that was just, those moments are more priceless. Or, I don't know, it was too hilarious, but, you know, I remember, and I know they still go, but the big Asian groups would come and they would pack your boat. And they want to get them on. They had like 45 people. And they want to get them on your boat or something. And get as many as possible. And then you get the guy the mic and then you kind of spiel, you know, tell him the stuff, the spiel. And it, so one of the best times that situation was with me, but I gave the guy the mic and he said, "Oh, I'm okay. You just drive the boat." And he would just had him crack up. I just got the kick back. And so like, man, if more cruises could be like this.
I always liked when we had the interpreters for the deaf on the boats. We do signing awareness days, and they would have interpreters on the boat for the entire day. And in the rotations, we'd probably wind up with the same interpreter a dozen and a half times during the day, and. I would start out, the people wasn't someone I knew, and I would tell the same joke the same way 3 times in a row, and on the 4th time I would totally change the punchline up. And usually it was like they would be in the middle of signing the way the joke was the first time. I eventually just found out that they just pretty much tell their own jokes, that they really, a lot of the stuff doesn't translate to sign, so they're just out there doing their own thing and not really paying attention to us anyway. But yeah, no, and those are the large groups. Talking about the exit, I've always been amazed at, you'll get these groups of people that come up, and not international, I mean U.S. They'll come up and they'll be like, is this the entrance to the ride? You've been in a place all day with hour to hour and a half long waits. You've paid a ridiculous amount of money for this privilege to come and stand in our lines and be hit with our beautiful advertising. You get to a place where you see what you think is an entrance to a ride where there's nobody there. What would lead you to believe that that was an entrance? even the restrooms have a fast pass queue at this point. You know, it's not like it's gonna just instantly, miraculously, you found a ride no one else knew about.
I think it's that, yeah, that fascination. That, oh, look, the boat's right there. Look, there's people getting off. Look, we can get right on.
Yeah.
Well, and there's also, and I know this happens everywhere. This happens probably in every theme park. But when they built the new boathouse, and there was two lines, you would just get people who would just stand in one line forever, and the other line would be totally empty. I'm like, no, you can go in here. Like, if it was open, you know, because they just see, like, well, this is a line, I better stand here in this line.
It's so funny. I mean, I can remember back to the old grass hut. I still love that queue for simplicity. I mean, I do appreciate the new one. But, you know, I didn't do this on purpose, but when I left the park, and since I transferred out of theme park and got into entertainment for a while, I never worked or went on the Jungle Cruise for more than 10 years, not just because I moved out of state, came back, yeah. But, you know, then once I had kids, it was kind of that pull to come back in. And so, you know, all of us can kind of sleepwalk by going through, you know, the Jungle Cruise.
It's like,
right?
cool runnings. You know, if the Jamaican bobsled team, even in their sleep, they're leaning to the left, leaning to the right, telling the punchline.
Definitely. And I was building up to the whole thing about the queue. The thatch queue was, you know, we had the simple gates. And when they made the boathouse, of course, and most people don't know this, the original concept was they're just going to get a bunch of people, about 40, into just like a bullpen area, like a space that would fit people standing comfortably for, mm-hmm. you know, and basically fit them in the boat. And that was kind of the idea. I'm like, well, you know, it went back and forth and kind of got to be where it was. We had eventually the two separate lines that split. But, you know, it just kills me. I was on it a week ago where we went in line, and where you make that turn where the leads desk is now. Mm-hmm. You know, still people, you know, you got to tell them two lines, three more signs. I mean, it's at an unfortunate spot. Also, when they have the stairs, maybe it works better when the people are going up the stairs than down the stairs. But what was even worse is that they had to block off one side, because there was a code V and on for rear load. So we got, and I kind of got a chuckle, not making fun of any of our current skippers, but you could see, well, if they could only really load from the front, they had a hard time figuring out how to load, you know, the boat won't list. So it was actually a little amusing for me, kind of saying, I wonder how they're going to handle this. And they kind of half loaded the boat, but something as simple as they just needed a gate right here. And I hate those moments where I'm overthinking and analyzing. I just want to go in as a guest, but, you know, you're thinking, well, first of all, where's the pixie dust? Come on, where's the pan and broom? Get these people over here. I just need to get what they say, it's like you can take the boy out of the jungle, but you can't take the jungle out of the boy.
That's right.
Right? And
that's a fantastic segue into the next thing I was going to talk about, which is the long-lasting effects of the jungle disease. I think, as we all know, jungle disease gets into your bloodstream and never leaves. So, I mean, what are some of the ways that, I mean, jungle has... Grant, we were talking, you know, some of the things that you've done, and feel free to plug-a-rama and go into that. But, I mean, honestly, you're giving me the litany of the things that you've done since you were with Disney. There isn't a single thing on that list that wouldn't have some influence from the Jungle Cruise ride.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've done stand-up or comedy songs since 97, and was very much interested in it all during, you know, I was a huge Weird Al fan and stuff while I worked at Disneyland. But definitely, you know, I've done stand-up. In recent years, I've worked with the Jim Henson Company, and I am a member of their Stuffed and Unstrung puppet improv troupe. And, you know, and doing improv for a couple of years now, both with puppets and without puppets, I'm definitely the guy who comes up with the pun, and that's totally Jungle Cruise. You know, there was, we did a show called Zombieance, this was last year, where it was an improvised zombie musical. This was not with Henson, this was just with this other improv group. And so it was completely improvised, and we would get, once the first person had become a zombie, somebody said, well, our zombies have a different quality. What quality do our zombies have? And like the audience would always say, like, oh, they dance, or they, you know, they're vegetarians or something like this. And one night they said, they tell old jokes, like old vaudeville jokes. And I was like, I got this. And that was like my favorite show that we did, because I was just pulling out Jungle Cruise jokes, you know, like crazy. So it's definitely, you know, Jungle Cruise is a big part of my life still.
And random tangent, we actually had a discussion about 6 months to a year ago about staging an all-zombie version of Rent called Brains. And to take all of the music and just slide in zombie references into the actual Rent musical. never ended up happening. Yeah, yeah, it could really work. So.
And if we get Neil Patrick Harris on board, who did the LA Rent production, that'd be amazing.
So, I mean, Chris, what about you? I mean, have you seen that Jungle is tied into, I mean, is it a lasting influence?
Well, it's so funny. I feel, you know, I don't want to call it tainted, but I got into the whole training and lead track. And I think once you kind of slip away from being the regular RO, being in rotation, you lose a little bit of that freedom, right? You know, eyes are on you a little closer. So, and I gravitated, unfortunately, towards the end of my operations days, I spent more time pushing buttons on Thunder than the Jungle. So you don't realize, you know, sometimes when you're there how short that can be. But, you know, being in the thick of it, you know, you're always able to deal. You're going to have a boatload of duds, or you're going to have just an overreactive boat, or just one person you're working to. And I think for me, I didn't get into the entertainment field, but it's real easy for me, like you said, especially when we start to do the whole cracking of the jokes thing. Usually have a few. I'm amazed. I don't know about you guys. I mean, we would do it over and over and over again, you know, on a 4, 6, 8 hour shift. How many people do they find out you are at the Jungle Cruise just want you to do the spiel, you know, part or all? And sometimes, depending on the setting, so if you had a few drinks, you can slip right into it. I was fascinating. I did a little bit for a friend at a conference. You know, we were at dinner, you know, and I did portions of it, right? And so he was fascinated. When he got back, he was texting me. So I was having a dialogue with my buddy through text, and he was relaying it on his end in Florida, no less, to this dinner party he was having. He said, oh, they're cracking up over here. So I just thought it was funny. Here I am influencing this whole group of people at dinner party via text.
Yeah.
But yeah, people just gravitate toward it. I mean, you got to think about it. And I never thought that it was my dream job to be a Jungle Cruiser. You know, we come and go. There are people that are, you know, I like some of the Brad Lees of the world that are really deadpan and they're delivering. Some guys that are really, you know, totally out there, extreme. You know, the Fred Gardner's of the world, and like even Noel Cox is good, or Steve Lieberman, or, you know, the guys that I remember just, you know, were so unique. And I was that guy. I was like Mr. More SOP. But, you know, you can fall into it and sleep. You know, you could be going through the grapevine, you know, in a snowstorm, and all of a sudden you trip into it. So for me, maybe it's an icebreaker at a party, but dealing with people, I think that's the Disney thing. But I think more so because we did the Jungle Cruise.
Oh, sure.
It's easy to kind of make the best out of any situation.
Well, I think every high school student going into college should take a year off and work at the park for a year. As far as maturity, as far as, you know, dealing with people from different cultural backgrounds, being able to work with an integrated business system. I mean, there's a lot of things that Disney teaches you. And a lot of things like how to avoid work.
I think that was the subculture we all...
Yeah, there was a subtext then.
Please. No, I remember my thought was, I loved working Jungle Cruise. And I don't know if it's this way now or in recent years or if it was still the same, but to me it was almost like, you got a 15-minute break, like, every hour, almost.
At the time,
At that time. And to me, it was almost like, I don't want to be on a break. And so it led to...
I for those people listening to the podcast, I mean, I have a hard time believing that. But I would probably say, Grant, I believe that and knew that about you.
right. Well, yeah, I was one of the few who loved working the ride and would just be in a boat.
You were very dedicated.
I was. Was I annoying?
No. No, we'll see if it's okay to broach in the subject of some of maybe what we might be notorious for in the Jungle, which I think that you live in infamy in certain ways.
Oh, fantastic.
So, I agree. You're saying there may be time you would probably have someone bump around, you'd stay in the boat a few times.
Well, but not even that was I would take a break, but then I would wind up hanging at the dock box with, you know, or hanging there
like
at the
Camel
lead desk,
or someone.
You know, yeah, with Larry or Rich or any of those guys, because to me it was like, I don't know, it was a fun, you know, and it was just a fun group, you know, like that first, I remember specifically that first, one of my first summer shifts, and you were there and we're like, we got to take pictures for that. I remember that,
I
mean, I still have it. Yeah. But remember we used to have that,
yeah,
there was a bulletin board,
yeah,
right at
you'd drive
front load
up,
that
yep.
you would drive past, and it would have announcements for the Jungle Cruise. and you took pictures, and they were my feet on how to fold your socks correctly to fold your summer socks.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But I have that picture still, but I just clearly remember that day, like, and just being so excited, like, this is another great day on the Jungle Cruise.
So Grant was basically professing the fact that in any 8-hour shift, he gladly would take one break for water and some oyster crackers.
Right. Yeah. No, I loved it. I loved being on.
And maybe
that.
A Dole Whip.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you would find times if you would find things on your break to do with guest interaction. You could always kind of tell the people who have the Disney heart would go out there and would talk to kids and would, you know, shuffle the line on their breaks or do things that were maybe not, you know, quote unquote work related. You know, they would go out there and have fun and interact with people. That's where you kind of see the people who were doing it for a paycheck versus doing it for the love of the attraction.
Think there's all, I mean, there's such a variety. That was another thing, too, because that was kind of the challenge. You could either have that positive or negative influences of others, you know, rub off on you. I love the fact, and I hope it's still there. You know, we've got our, you know, Jerry York still around, and Wheeler, he says, still there.
Noel actually is over at California Adventure.
Well, I worked there, you know, right Ed Knowles era too, and love that. And it's cool that those guys are still around to kind of hopefully kind of perpetuate. I always thought that there was a lot of lore. There's kind of some things that you pass on, you know, not necessarily a secret handshake, but there's some respect
there. You don't know the secret handshake.
Oh, come on. You guys probably made one up. I'll just tell you right now.
No, actually it starts with Walt. We have a lineage. It's the Order of the Hippo. Fraternal order.
Well, and I guess the funny thing, you remember, you know, we always remember being on the cruise and Spieling, but, you know, some of the best times we probably had were also backstage, you know, whether it was in boat storage or in the old break rooms and stuff like that. And, you know, when I cruise the park now, I'm like, God, you know, you walk through Adventureland or back around by River Bell, you're like, I just want to go up in the break rooms, hang out, you know.
Go see the break room,
Get a slightly stale sandwich from the rotating vending machine.
Well, and you know, they rethemed the West Side Diners. They took out the Dick Tracy theme, finally.
Oh, yeah, that was, so luckily, that, I think we missed that.
Oh, yeah, the West Side Diner had a full Dick Tracy overlay when the movie came out. And luckily that went away.
See, we just called it the deck or the pit.
Well, it was the deck, and it became the West Side Diner, I think, while we were there.
Right.
And one of my favorite stories of the West Side Diner was they had a jukebox there West Side Diner.
They did. It was 50s themed.
It was 5 cents to play a song. And I don't know who it was, but one day someone said, like, listen, just play Would You Like to Ride in My Beautiful Balloon. And it was a Jungle Cruise thing, so you always had these Jungle Cruise skippers going on break, and they would go over to the West Side Diner, and they would play just nonstop, just pumping money in the jukebox, Would You Like to Ride in My Beautiful Balloon? And it was just constant. It was this loop. And every time it would start, the whole table of Jungle Cruise skippers who were there would just giggle like crazy. And I was there when there was like 5 or 6 of us there, because we were all on different breaks from different rotations. And it started up again, and the woman behind the counter went over with the keys. She opened up the thing and came over to our table and broke the record right in front of us.
Fabulous.
And so I remember, like, the next day somebody was like, well, today let's do this song. And it didn't, you know, like, no, but they weren't having it. So they just...
Well, after you know, Beautiful Balloon, what is there?
That's true.
That's really the pinnacle of... But, I mean, did you find that Jungle Cruise skippers... I don't think we have to argue the point. Jungle Cruise skippers are the troublemakers in the park. We were the ones who had the heightened sense of humor. We were willing to go to any extreme to do a stupid joke. I heard one the other day that I thought was absolutely brilliant, which was releasing the white wiffle balls into the hippo pool so it looked like they were playing Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That's a brilliant joke.
Yeah, I enjoy that.
So, I mean, you know, I think that the skippers, there was the dry ice. We did dry not that I had any affiliation with this.
Sure.
But there was about 25 or 30 pounds of dry ice that got smuggled into the park. It was dumped at the top of Schweitzer on Halloween. And you had, for about 30 minutes, a rolling fog coming over the top of Schweitzer Falls. It was pretty
classy.
Cool.
That's a good one.
I heard in my emails. By the way, always loving to hear the Jungle Cruise stories by email. Feel free to give me a yell. JungleCrews, CREWS@gmail.com. There was a story that happened in the 70s where someone on their last day of work went over to the laundry facilities and grabbed 2 large things of laundry detergent and put them into the top of Schweitzer, and they had chest-high bubbles over the entire turnaround. They actually had to close the ride down because there was this giant agitation of laundry soap bubbles running through the turn down the Nile.
So I was going to say that I wasn't far removed from the 70s. I haven't heard that one, but Grant and I were there. This made the mess on the circuit not too long ago on our Facebook page where it was Rocky, Robert Hines, who, sorry to out you there, buddy, but, you know, you don't have rehire status, don't worry. But for the sake of those who always wanted to know, it was early 90s, you know, late 80s, early 90s. Definitely, I think we determined it was like 91, 90, 90-ish, 91, where he took a whole good-sized thing of, you know, not laundry detergent, but it was just like Dawn or something like that, and put it in the hippo pool. Unfortunately, caused him... to get no rehire status, but it filled the whole elephant pool, of course, with the falls right there, just full of bubbles, and close that down.
Well, they need to clean up their act anyway.
So. Well, I remember one summer there was a shift change, so it must have been like 4:30 or something, and but it was slammed. It was during the summer, and so, you know, when it gets really slammed, you send deadheads so you can unload a bunch of boats at once. So if the line is too long. You even on a busy day, you send an empty boat because there's so many boats that are backed up waiting to unload. And so it was this shift change, and all these people were changing shifts, so we all hopped on the deadhead. And I don't want to give out too many names here, but it was like about five or six skippers, and there was one skipper who had brought along a piece of garden hose. So because we all knew we were taking this deadhead, and we were all going to get around to the other side of Schweitzer Falls, so we could do the dead skipper over the front of the boat thing, but except there was like 10 of us. And so one skipper put the hose in his mouth, then down his shirt and down his pant leg, and then hung by his feet over into the water. So his head was in the water, but he could still breathe because he had the hose hidden up down his shirt.
Fabulous.
Another skipper was on top of the boat, and when the boat came around, fell off with the rocking of the boat, like he was dead and fell down into the boat. And one of us had a spear. There was just a spear that had made its way to the front, had a spear and was holding it. So it was this huge boat of like 10 dead skippers. So we got around and we're all laughing. And this boat comes in and this mother is furious. She is really, really mad. And she was like, "What is it with this boat of dead skippers that's out there? My child is traumatized now because it's a boat of dead..." And we're all standing there going, there's no boat of dead skippers, right? And the lead was half wet. I won't say why he was half wet, but and he was actually the lead who was leaving. The other lead was the lead who fell, or the guy who fell. But they're both just standing there straight-faced to this poor lady going, "We don't know what you're talking about. What are you talking about?" And he's soaking wet.
Which is continuing proof. I really think that the dead skipper thing is far more interesting to us.
Sure.
I have yet to meet a guest who really ever got that. I mean, it just kind of was one of those, you know, disposable moments that was there to entertain. And most of the Jungle Cruise, let's be realistic here, it was there to entertain us. The guests were kind of a peripheral thing. We would have done
That's what you were saying earlier.
That's what I said. They just happened to be there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't even know if they have, I don't think they have it anymore, but we used to have a skip at our disposal. So there's gift stories.
Oh, I have a skip story.
Well, there was one point that the engine on the skiff fell off in the elephant pool while it was running.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they had to actually go out and paddle it. And I don't think that I don't know if now there's an engine attached to it or not, but.
Oh, that's so unfortunate.
Yeah.
One night, it was during, you know, it was a late night summer shift during Fantasmic when not a lot of people go through the Jungle Cruise, and I was, as you said, hanging out at the lead thing, and Rich goes, "Hey, you want to take the skiff out?" And I was like, "Take the skiff out?" And he's like, "Yeah, we'll take the maintenance guy." So I was just like, "Yeah, sure, I'd love to. This is great." So we went out into the skiff, and we're just tootling along in the dark, and it was in the dark, really. There's no lights back there, and the skiff doesn't have any lights. So we're just kind of puttering our way through, and we get near the African Veldt, and Rich goes, "Do you want to drive?" And I go, "Oh, sure, okay. I've never driven one of these before." And it's an outboard motor, so, you know, it's the opposite of the way you want to go, and I could not get that. And... So, but I'm kind of puttering along, and then I finally make our way into the hippo pool, and I don't know how he did it, but Doug came up behind us in a jungle boat full of people and flipped the lights on and then had that high-powered flashlight on us and just goes, "It's those hippo poachers! Let's get them!" And he floors it, and I'm still driving, and Rich is like, "Get out of," you know, because I don't know how to drive, and I'm panicking. And so Rich drives us, and as we're headed towards Schweitzer Falls, and like that boat was right behind us because that engine is much more powerful than...
Well, actually, the skip motor is pretty good. You can outrun them. But you're at the helm.
Right. So I'm... as we head towards Schweitzer Falls, Rich goes, "Listen, if I don't..." He's going to shoot the gap between the rocks and Schweitzer Falls to get away from this boat. And he goes, "If I somehow put the front end of the boat underneath the water, you have to help me get this boat up from the bottom of the... You have to help me get the skiff up from the bottom of the thing." Because he was going to... You know, it was possible he could have... He went under the falls, he'd fill the whole boat with water.
Yeah, there's an art to that turn. So did you make it?
He made it, yeah.
Oh,
he made. He made it. We were fine. And then Doug was laughing as he passed us.
Yeah, there's only a few spots that the skiff can pass a boat or get away. So you're in a tight spot unless you duck out of the hippo pool. That's fabulous. Well, yeah, there was one time where it was at night. It seemed to always be at night. It was more appropriate. We took a tour or two. We tried to, maybe there were four or five boats running, so it was minimal. But we knew the spots, and we were able to pass. And I think we only ended up passing two boats max, just of our timing, where it was kind of tight. But, I want to think that, if a normal cruise is about 8 minutes, that, we did it easily in half. But,
I have one of those stories too, but I want to talk about.
I alluded to something about that maybe.
Oh,
you
not
correct.
Even that.
Okay,
I want to talk about something else first, but and this is because I think it was during that same summer where it was just like my first summer working jungle. And it was so much fun. Was Chukka the little bird? Wasn't it a little bird, stuffed bird?
You thought it was Chukka. First of all, we'll have to get Larry Campbell in on this, but definitely Chim Chim. The chimpanzee, the static chimp.
Uh-huh.
But you're thinking of, there was a bird.
Like, there was a little stuffed bird that, I just remember you even saying, like, "Look for Chukka out there," and that you would hide somewhere in the jungle and would be a little game for the Jungle Cruise skippers of, like, okay, well, where is he going to be today? You know,
well,
he's somewhere else.
Maybe memory and our memory has faded over time, but definitely Chim Chim for sure. And that would, you had to get in the skip to get the Chim Chim or get it on one of the islands and be able to kind of, place it ever so often, because you couldn't always stage yourself out there unless you were the luxury of being out of a rotation or you were the lead or somehow there was a changeover, right? Or on a break. God, that pretty much means anybody.
Anybody can
follow.
And that continued, because for a while it was Find Simba, where Simba was being hit, a little plush Simba was being hit out in the jungle. So that happened. That's continued. That legacy has moved on.
Do they still can they still go out in the jungle? I mean, do they without
of,
fear of termination?
As of when I left, it was leads and trainers only out on safari. And I got a guided tour on my first last day, and then on my second last day, I wasn't that concerned about it. So I got pulled to Lincoln on my second last day. I was so upset. I wanted that last jungle cruise, day, and I got pulled to Lincoln in the middle of my shift. And I'm like,
"Wow,
you can't do
that."
Wow,
so that's all part of that narrations thing. You got sucked over because that was a narrating attraction.
Actually, it's West Side now. Basically, there's four areas, and the West Side one, because everyone's landlocked now, where you only can work on the west side of the park within Adventureland, Frontierland, or then there's New Orleans Critter Country as its own business unit.
Uh-huh.
So basically,
which how it was when I heard it.
Yeah, that's how it was.
But there's that split there where you can't even work Mansion. But there were people like Maynard who was working Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, Jungle, and Mansion.
So he was crossing
lands.
He
was split in three of them, and then they put the landlock down, and that was it. Where basically it was Main Street Vehicles, Lincoln, Jungle, Thunder, Indy was all one business unit, and then the Mark Twain. And then New Orleans Critter Country was, Pirates and all that stuff on that side of it. So then did you guys do a last boat? Did you do anything special on your last day?
No.
Well, Grant didn't get the opportunity. You can answer that one. And, mine was unceremonial. I worked for the company for basically, 12, 13 years through when I didn't need a job in high school, through college, and transferred over. And so I actually transferred out and never had, you know, any type of farewell. I didn't have a Noel Coxian type of jump off the bow of Mark Twain or, you know, a Dave Pinchek safari on his last day, or, you know, jump in or get thrown in or do there was a really great last day by Chris Utley, who still, I think, works in entertainment and management in some capacity, where we had him fooled with the old jungle, with the old cue, throwing the rear switch, or actually we threw the Dominguez switch? But anyway, it was that and the front switch. And so as he came around, Trader Sam, he didn't come on the dock. He went on the catwalk. And of course, you guys don't know, because it wasn't connected, or when they rehabbed it, they disconnected one of them. But anyway, the point is that he made an entire loop. So he just continued his same boat of guests, and he made another 8-minute trip. It was hilarious because he was very deadpan and great improv. And so he was able to kind of realize it, kind of give us the look, and kind of had that moment where, welcome aboard the Jungle Cruise. It just kept on going. They didn't miss a beat. But unfortunately, I didn't have that luxury. It's all right. I kind of like that because it's kind of like that whole Walt Disney adage, you know, Disneyland will never be completed. So I kind of feel that my cruise is never over. So, you know.
That would happen with the new track switch alignment, where you'd have four boats on the main line and everything else in storage on a really slow day. And you'd go nighttime, and you'd just be like, hey, you guys want to take another trip? And you'd just jam the throttle down and just go right through the loading area, go right back out in the jungle. And it's fine until you realize that there may be people in line who are trying to figure out why someone else gets a free ride. And I think that's something we found out about guests, is that they can be a little petty. If they don't get something that someone else is getting, they can be a little upset about it. And I think most of the things that wind up goofing the jungle up end up starting in City Hall. It's usually guest complaints.
They end up in City Hall. I don't know if they start there.
All right, guys. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming and taking time. We could probably do another hour of this at least. And maybe down the road we'll do a version 2.0 and throw some more info out there. But I appreciate you guys coming in. Anything else? Yeah, I know, Greg, did you want to plug Arama anything? Or?
I'm all right. I mean, I do the...
I'll plug him.
Oh. Chris, would you do my plugs, please?
What I'm fascinated, because you know, most of you may, you can find out very easily, and then you can insert as necessary, is that my kids, luckily through social media and everything, where we all the old skippers can reconnect, my kids latched on to Grant. You do your Grant's Advent calendar, which is coming up. It's something that you do. So we're looking forward to that. So I think that you can do to grantsadventcalendar.com.
Yeah.
And which is also, I think you post on your Facebook page, which I'm not trying to get any stalkers to go there, but it's very good. It's great age appropriate stuff. It kind of a blend of what you're doing, your other activities. But if that's one thing I can plug, it's very good for the holiday
season. Thank you very much. Yeah, I do a lot of podcasts. So I have Grant's Advent Calendar. I also do the podcast for the Jim Henson Company, the Henson.com podcast, which is on iTunes. So go check that out, and then I can keep my job there. And Jungle Cruise skipper Doug, who him and I created a podcast called The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd,
which is awesome.
We don't make it anymore, but it's always constantly being rebroadcast. So you can go to drfloyd.com. And there's a couple episodes in season two. One of them I think is called The Jungle Cruise, where we just do Jungle Cruise jokes the entire time.
I think that's the one thing that, you know, the diehard. The people who turn jungle into a fetish or a lifestyle beyond just, you know, doing it as a job one summer tend to really like to dig into all the other stuff. And there is a community of it. I think it's kind of like a layer cake where each layer kind of just interacts with the layer underneath it, particularly when bonded together with tasty frosting. but you really have there's a little stratification of the year to year. And part of the reason we started doing this podcast was to try to, you know, do some connections and get people to explore outside of their own generational range and see what else is out there. And also to put a sense of the history of not only things that have happened at Jungle, but feeling a little bit of hope that down the road that there may be some lucrative actual real job that you can have after you tell funny jokes and do the boat ride for a while. But no one that we sit down and talk with hasn't said that it isn't one of the top two or three experiences in their life that they've gotten a chance to do. So,
look, I'm wearing the shirt.
I know. Yeah, I was wearing
the good
shirt.
One. I haven't seen that one in a long time. Yeah, that's a company shirt, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wearing the Underoos, but I'm not going to go to that extreme. So, well, guys, thank you for visiting on Tales from the Jungle Cruise. As every time, we wish you a hearty and happy Kungaloosh, and look forward to seeing you in the very short-term future. We have a couple big, exciting announcements coming about the Jungle Cruise radio play that we'll be taping in January. I'll get you more information on that. Facebook, facebook.com/junglecruise, C-R-E-W-S. And I'm on Twitter, which is actually a bizarre, strange thing, at Skipcast.
Skipcast. I'm going to follow you now. Yes. Right now.
Well, we're
I would have tweeted from this podcast had I known.
Well, I'm working on getting the Skip Empire. Skip Cast, Skip Drink, Skip Television Network. We're going to take over the entire culture of it. So, guys, thanks a bunch, Kungaloosh. We'll see you guys all in the next podcast. Welcome to the addendum to Tales from the Jungle Cruise, Episode 8.
I just wanted to, this is Skipper Grant, put a call out there for Dave Abbott. Dave Abbott, if you're out there, I've been trying to find you for years, and I haven't talked to you in a long time. So if you're out there, get in touch, man, on Facebook, or go to MrGrant.com, or just email me. Love to talk to you. Chris, do you have a shout-out?
I have a shout-out. This is... Chris Lambert, Skipper Chris, and I guess I have my shout out to Noel Cox. Noel, we're Facebook friends. Your wife and I were area tour reps and university leaders together. Every time we go to the park, you're never there, man. So wherever you are, we've got to connect next time I bring my kids to the park.
Thanks, Kyle.
Hi, guys.
Well, I know it's kind of cliche, but I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as we enjoyed making it for you. I just want to kind of let you know, we were going to split this one in half. It was such a great podcast. We're just going to leave it whole since we haven't had a content update for a few weeks. So we'll leave the entire hour and so up. We may or may not put one up the next following week. We'll see how the recording schedule goes. We're trying to schedule time with skippers. And if you're a Jungle Cruise skipper and you want to sit down with us in the Palatial Skipcast Studios, just drop us an email, junglecruise, C-R-E-W-S, @gmail.com. Or if the personal touch isn't so great for you, you're always welcome to record a WAV file of your Jungle Cruise stories, and we will edit it together and put it up on the Jungle Cruise podcast. You guys are great. I genuinely appreciate all the support you gave while I was out, and I'm looking forward to putting up more great interviews and more tales from the Jungle Cruise.